got your password, you got your pin. If you lose all the ice gets thin, whoa. I'm living in a bubble.
Welcome to the Strange Brew podcast. My name's Jason Barnard, and that was Medicine Head and Living in a Bubble, one of the highlights of Medicine Head's latest album, Heartwork. And I've got John Fiddler here today on the Strange Brew. A huge welcome, John.
Hey, thank you, Jason. Welcome to you too, and everybody listening.
Living in a Bubble, so that was one of the lead singles from the album. Can you tell us about the concept of that?
Well, it's like the unfortunate situation that happens in times like these is that the circumstances tend to encourage people to live in a bubble, you know, and not get involved.
Right.
So they end up living without being interactive or proactive towards what needs to be changed or what needs to be talked about. You just end up living in a bubble and not try to do something about it. So that's the basis of it. But I guess everyone will take their own meaning out of it. But there's some little home truths here and there in it as well, you know, a little bit of humor, you know, like you got your password, you got your pin. If you lose it, the ice gets thin. You know, it's sort of simple little lines like that.
From Heartwork, we've got Making Up for Lost Love, and that's a great sort of blues feel track. But one of the themes of your songs, John, is that there's love songs throughout your catalogue, isn't there?
Yeah, I'm the writer of love songs, all different types. And I've said to many people, you know, that almost to a fault, you know, there's always a reference to love in most of my songs. But, you know, I think it's the same for everyone, really. You know, once you begin to have relationships and you know, even with your little kid and you've got your little puppy dog, you know, whatever. But the point is that it's like a driving force in our lives. It's either love or love gone bad. And making up for lost love is exactly that. It's making up for lost love because of circumstances, you know, things that happen to you, you know. So, I mean, there's a line in it that says, you know, that something like the way you did me is like needs to have jail sentence time, you know. So, pretty rough stuff. So it's not all, you know, lovey-dovey all the time. Woo-woo. It's not all like that. But,
yeah,
you know, bless him, Steve Miller, love that track. But, you know, as we know, love isn't always a smooth path.
Medicine Head, is that, that's just you and whoever you're collaborating with, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, Medicine Head is me, basically. Peter Hope Evans, who we started together in the late 60s. Peter left in, for the last time, and he left in 76, I think he was. And, you know, he was happy to say, you carry on. But he wanted to do something else, you know, he wanted to move on, do other things. So Medicine Head now is, and has been since that time, just me. And then I bring in players, you know. I've got some great people working with me. You know, there's a guitar player named Diesel Martin, who I've been working with for a very long time, actually. I got him involved in a band called Box of Frogs, which was basically I had a phone call from the Yardbirds. They were looking to make a new album with new songs, and they were looking for a singer. Jim McCarty called me and he said, we're looking for a singer who plays a harmonica and writes songs. Do you know anybody? And I said, yeah, you know why you called, Jim. So that was really cool, you know. And so I got quite a few people into that project. It was the Yardbirds, which was Paul Samuel Smith, Chris Dreher, Jim McCarty, and then me. So we were the core of Box of Frogs. And then we had guests. And, you know, I got Rory Gallagher involved, for example, who's like, if you think of a guitar player who stunned the world, you know, he did. He's just a great blues guitar player, great guitar player. I think Hendrix once said, when somebody asked him what it was like being the world's greatest guitar player, he said, I don't know, ask Rory Gallagher. I mean, Rory was just beautiful, fantastic player. So, and I got Diesel involved in that. And so we've been working since before then, but we did a lot of work on that. And he's involved in these new albums. Dave Bucket Caldwell, he plays on one track on this Hard Work album. He played a couple of tracks on Warriors of Love. And then I've got an amazing friend who has got an incredible voice, and she does a lot of backing vocals with me on stuff. And her name's Belinda Campbell. And she's incredible, Jason. I mean, she's just amazing voice. And we actually made a single together for her under her own name, Belinda Campbell, called Painkiller. That's out there. If you guys go to Spotify or wherever, or go to my website, you can download it, get it, buy it. I'm lucky that I've got her working with me. You know, she's great.
That Box of Frogs album, not only did it have members of the Yardbirds, but also a member of the Yardbirds, you had Jeff Beck.
Yeah.
As well as Rory on there. And Jeff was on Back Where I Started, wasn't he?
Yeah, he played on that. He played on Two Steps Ahead of that Man. I think he was on that. And The Boy, there's a track called Poor Boy that Jeff played on. I mean, just incredible, amazing player. Sadly missed now, but he's left such a great body of work.
Mm.
And for us who met him and knew him and worked with him, you know, it's just incredible, inspirational human being.
Uh-huh.
And very humble, great guy.
Yeah.
So what was the origins of Medicine Head, and how did you link up with Pete Hope Evans?
Well, that was all from school, way back. His father was relocated in his job from South Wales up to the Midlands, which is where I lived. And so we met at this new school in the Midlands called Wensfield Grammar School. And this guy was walking around with a harmonica sticking up out of his pocket. And I had one too, you know, so it was really interesting. And so it kind of started there, I guess, you know, and developed. I mean, we were lucky. It didn't all happen in one go, you know, it was like we're writing songs and really not playing them anywhere or going out anywhere to play. You know, another friend from school, a guy named Andrew Lilly, came over to where I was living and he said, well, what are you doing? And I said, well, I don't know, really writing some songs and that's it. You know, and he said, what, you're not out playing? And of course we weren't. So he said, well, why not? And I said, I don't know. Well, we don't have a car. We don't have anywhere to play. And he said, right, we've got to change all that. This guy, he'd left school and he'd become like managing director of a company in the Midlands. And he was already managing director, 21 years old or something. And he was a real energetic go-ahead guy. So the next day he came around again. We went off, bought a car from a junk yard, a Vauxhall Victor for £5. And I had to drive it. I'd never driven a car before. I didn't have a license, no insurance, no nothing, you know, and just drove out of the junkyard into a lamppost and backed up and drove on. You know, I didn't hit it hard, obviously, but really good days, you know, really entertaining days. And that was it. We just started. And he went out and he found places for us to play. And we just used to just break in almost, you know, and arrive before anybody else or just gate crash gigs. And that's what you had to do. You know, you just got to make your own luck. You got to get out there and work. And that's what we did. And I played piano most of the time at that point. But most of the gigs had really smashed up pianos, you know, or out completely out of tune, keys missing, whole bits of the actual keyboard missing. So we had to get a guitar and we came down to London, bought a guitar. I've still got it. It's a Gibson 330. ES 330. Fantastic. Anyway, we got the guitar. I had to learn how to play guitar, transfer everything from piano onto the guitar. And so like when we went out, did the first gigs with a guitar, my fingers were still bleeding, you know, from blisters. And I was just, and that's, I don't know, it didn't matter. It's just what you do.
And you got a tape to John Peel?
Yeah. Again, we gatecrashed a club in the Midlands called the Lafayette Club in Wolverhampton. And we just told everybody we were the main act. I think they were Jethro Tull. So we pretended that we were Jethro Tull. So they let us in. And we set up our gear. And then obviously Jethro Tull arrived, you know, and it's like, what the hell are you guys doing, you know? I persuaded the manager of the club to let us play. And John saw us for about 5 minutes and he said, send me a tape of your songs. He was really interested. So we had to somehow make a tape, which was, I don't know if you're aware, but there are these things called the kitchen tapes, Medicine Head kitchen tapes. And they're like the really infamous tapes because we borrowed a domestic tape recorder, like a Grundig or something.
Yeah.
And recorded them in the kitchen. We recorded about 4 or 5 songs and sent them to Peel. And Peel played them to John Lennon and Eric Clapton and Pete Townsend. And John Lennon said, you got to sign these guys and you have to put this out as it is. So the very first thing Medicine Head released was the kitchen tape. Yeah. And thanks to Mr. Lennon and the support of Pete, Mr. Townsend, Clapton, and people like that. And of course, John Peel, who signed us to his new record label, Dandelion Records. You know, we got a foot on the ladder, you know, got a foot in the door. And John was fantastic, both Lennon and Peel. Peel, he used to take us around to gigs that he was playing because we were completely unknown. And he would take us to any places that he was playing and persuade the promoter or the club owner to let us play.
Yeah.
That's kind of how we started in terms of being recognized. It was through John, and he was just amazing. And he did that for a lot of people. You know, he helped so many people who wouldn't have got onto mainstream radio or anything. You know, he opened a lot of people's minds to alternative music instead of Val Dunican, you know. Nothing against Val. He was doing all right, you know, on his own. But John opened up a lot of people's minds to new kind of music or different kind of music. Our music is based in the blues, which is centuries old. Yeah, we put our own spin on it.
That debut single, His Guiding Hand, there's just something about that recording. It was absolutely the right decision to release it in its form because it's just got a gentle magic to it. John Peel, his love for that song continued many decades after.
Yeah, the thing about that recording is the feeling we got on there. It's not the sonic quality. It's because it's really lo-fi, you know, it's lo-fi. But that doesn't matter. You know, it's the way it feels. And that's like the old blues stuff, that track. It's a very spiritual joining with people. Yeah, that's what Lennon saw, and that's what John Peel saw, you know, or heard, I should say. It was a good time, you know, period of time. Peter, Hope Evans and myself worked really well together. And mostly, I think, because we're not, you know, we weren't what we thought of as musicians. In fact, to this day, you know, if someone says, are you a musician? I often say, no, I'm a magician. I make you think I'm a musician because it's more about the magic to me than it is about the noteworthiness or the technique or the technicality or the stuff like that. For me, I'm more interested in trying, you know, don't always succeed, but I will always try to help to make something feel really good. And so that's kind of where I come from. I like magic.
Ashes and sackcloth made me weak and lean. Yes, it did. feather down in dust, 'cause they kept my heart on green blowings. When I kiss my face, oh, what a hole in my heart, in my mouth. My loving will return you from east, west, north, and south, oh yeah. By the jaw, he brought me to his feet with his guiding hand. With his guiding hand.
So, what did Keith Relf as a producer add to your sound? One of the results of it that you had a huge hit single, and The Pictures in the Sky, which was Dandelion's, I think, only sort of major hit record.
Yeah. I wrote Pictures in the Sky one night in the dressing room before we went on stage. And I said to Pete, we'll play this, you know. And we did. We were lucky because there were just two of us. We didn't really have to rehearse. Pete played bits of wood, harmonica, jaws, harps. And it was very easy for us to do whatever we wanted to do. So I just played it, just started playing it. Pete joined in. And the crowd, people there, place was packed to the rafters, and they just went wild. And we had to play the song about four or five times, at the very least, over and over again. They wouldn't let us stop playing it. It was just so much fun, Jason. I mean, just incredible. The key connection was that he was managed by the same people who'd begun or started to manage us. And his band Renaissance had split.
Right.
It was after Yardbirds. And Keith was looking for things to do, and he was recommended or suggested that he would produce us, And of course, I loved the Yardbirds like anybody else at that time, And so we got together and we got along really well. We went into the Marquee Studios in Wardour Street, just at the back of the Marquee Club, and recorded that. And Keith and I became good friends, and he moved out of London, moved up to the Midlands, lived next door to me. Peter Hope Evans left at that time as well. We had that hit. Peter didn't like it, or there's something about the situation he didn't like. He didn't want to do things like Top of the Pops or I don't know. We were accused of selling out, which is like a regular thing back in that day, in those days. We'd sold out. We'd become commercial. We were an underground. We were called a progressive group, believe it or not. I mean, compared with what people call prog rock now, we were a million miles away. But, at the same time, we were very unusual, very kind of individual.
Mm.
There was nobody else doing what we did, whether that's good or bad. But I think it was good in the end because it stood us in good stead. But Peter didn't like doing things like Top of the Pops or whatever. And so he moved on. He left. And Keith joined up on bass, I suggested to him to come and play bass in Medicine Head and carry on producing us. And he did. And we did before Peter left, we'd done another album called Heavy on the Drum. And then when Keith joined up, played bass, we had a guy named John Davis. And for anybody who reads Wikipedia or any of those sites, there was only the only drummer at that time was John Davis. Wikipedia's got all kinds of misinformation on it. So there was Keith Relf, John Davis, and me. And that was the personnel that recorded Dark Side of the Moon, which was a year or a year and a half before the magnificent piece of work that Pink Floyd did called Dark Side of the Moon. During that period of time, their Dark Side of the Moon was called Eclipse. And when ours didn't get very far, they decided they would use the title. Which is fine, it's there's no copyright on a title, sadly. Eventually, Peter wanted to come back and rejoin. Keith wanted to go off, and he formed a band called Armageddon. He was getting calls from the USA to go out to, I think it was Atlantic Records. So Keith left, John Davis went on his way. And actually, John, he started up a catering company called the Rolling Stove, which is pretty good.
So Pete had come back by the time you had another huge single, One and One is One?
Yeah, we were signed then by Polydor, John's label, the Dandelion Record label. We had the only hit they ever had, so you can't sustain with no income. Mm. So all the other bands that John had got there, they were good, but no, somehow it didn't work out economically. And so Dandelion folded. We went on to be signed by Polydor, and we were introduced to a guy named Tony Ashton, who Ashton, Gardner and Dyke, they had a big hit with the Resurrection Shuffle.
Of course.
And Tony was an incredible character, you know, and anybody who knew him just loved him to bits, you know, and he's sadly missed, you know. He started producing us, and
yeah,
I'd got this song called One and One is One, which I envisaged as being a kind of a New Orleans, sort of rolling New Orleans kind of beat. So it was like a bit sort of sanitized compared with how I first thought of it. And out of the blue, it became this huge hit, you know. So what can you say? It certainly took me by surprise. Through every flight,
You're on a bit of a roll by then, because the hits kept coming, and one of those, for example, is Rising Sun, and it's a great single. You were in a real groove in terms of writing and recording in that period.
Yeah, it was funny, actually, because I went over to Tony's flat and played him, just on an acoustic guitar, the Rising Sun, you know, and it's got that bit where it goes into the falsetto. Don't underestimate what you... I won't do it right now in case the voice cracks to pieces, but it has a falsetto there. And then the down, 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 like a constant glimpse of the rising sun. And, you know, I said, Pete's going to play the mouth bow. It's going to sound great. And he said, you can't do that. He was like really like adamant that you couldn't have this section in with the falsetto and that sort of old school rundown on the guitar. But once we started to record it, he got it and he got completely into it. He was obsessed with it, basically. You know, it's really good. So I do like that record, actually. It's a good record. Kenny Everett, he went crazy for that. I don't know if you remember dear old Kenny.
He championed some great records, and not only ones that were commercially successful, but he had a great ear for music.
Yeah, he did. And he was just a great guy, you know, obviously funny as hell, and lots of other stuff too. But the thing is, it was very well received.
Your fingers touch me with poetry. you're like a constant glimpse of the rising sun. Ah, you're like a constant glimpse of the rising sun.
My actual favourite of the Medicine Head hits is a song called Slip and Slide.
Yeah, that's got a real influence of, is it Slim Harpo?
Slim Harpo, yeah. That was a hit record. It was a damn shame because at that time we were on the 3-day week, I think it was. You roll into town and not know whether there's going to be any power anywhere. You know, so a lot of gigs that bands played, they were not able to play because there was no power. It was all shut down. We did a few where I just said, look, F that, and just get the acoustic guitar out and play. And as long as we could get enough light. But the thing is, when we put out Slip and Slide, it had a lot of pre-orders, you know, like nearly 250,000 pre-orders for the single. And they were delivered, and a lot of them were faulty. And so they had to go back.
Oh.
And the factory had to like repress. But the thing is, because they're on a 3-day week, we were just backed up and we were at the back of the queue, you know, so we couldn't replace and, you know, things moved on. So we only got in the top 20, I think. I'm not sure, but we didn't get as high as we would have got if, you know, the pressings had not been faulty. But the thing is, that is my favorite of them all. And it was such a joy to get something so kind of, I never suspected in a million years that that would get in the charts anyway. It's influenced by Slim Harpo. You know, I'm influenced by the blues. I mean, I got no beef with that.
Yeah.
The blues is influenced by the blues. You know, the old blues guys, they all played, they all just intertwined.
My bag, you can get to feeling loose, you can dust your heels, don't need no excuse, you'll always feel the spirit let yourself get in it. You live in the clouds, you stand on the sea, your silver is green. Are you playing with me?
You continued releasing material for the next few years, whether it's Mama Come Out or It's Natural. What was the reason why those songs weren't as big as your previous records? Was the style of music in the charts changing, or was things moving on?
Well, I think there was a lot of instability because Pete had left and we'd got back and we'd got all that going. Like, for example, during It's Natural, I think we'd been up and down the motorway a million times. And punk was just starting, which was great. You know, we were called proto-folk punk, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Back in the early 70s, late 60s, proto-folk punk. Fantastic. We never had an issue with, you know, we did gigs where lots of, you know, punks came, you know. We actually played gigs when punk bands dropped out, couldn't do that gig, and we were called to read it. There'd be like a room full of punks, and we never had any issues doing that because we crossed over, you know, we crossed all kinds of different boundaries. We wouldn't recognize that we couldn't be there. So we were signed by Chas Chandler to his label. Chas managed Slade and he managed Jimi Hendrix for a while in the early days. And obviously he was the bass player in the Animals. And it was during that time that, you know, we were completely broke. I mean, we hadn't got a penny after all those hits. We hadn't got a penny. We'd just been ripped, you know. And so Pete Townsend said, look, you can use my studio out at Goring-on-Thames. And he had a lovely boathouse that was converted into a studio. And Pete, you know, said, just go there. All you got to do is get an engineer. You can have the whole place for free for as long as you need it. And so what a man. It really helped us. And in fact, long before that, we used to go there and we would play at Pete's garden parties that he used to have. So Peter Hope Evans and I, as Medicine Head, in 1969, 1970, we'd be playing at the garden parties. It's just great. You can imagine what it'd be like at that time. So just fabulous. And anyway, Pete let us use the studio and we recorded an album called Two Man Band, which is like a really boring name, really. I wanted to call it Little Big Band. And Chas wouldn't have that. He said, no, it's not having that. It's like, I think there was a movie with Dustin Hoffman called Little Big Man. But I thought Little Big Band suited us because there was only two of us. We were a little band that sounded enormous, you know,
right.
Sounded so big live. Anyway, like I said, we were broke. We had to get back in the truck and with the equipment and that stuff, you know, after having been through quite a ride, and get back in there and go up and down the country and play everywhere and all that. And I think you mentioned a song called It's Natural. That had just gone into the top 40. And unfortunately, Pete turned around to me and said, I'm leaving again. So it was like, oh my God, here we go. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know whether Medicine Head at that time was meant to carry on as it was. You know, it just seemed like it would get three steps forwards and two back. We had a great time. Peter Hope Evans is still playing, plays incredibly good harmonica. He's working with a guy named Robbie McIntosh. You probably know of him at the very least, you know.
Yeah.
He was with McCartney, Paul McCartney's band, The Pretenders, John Mayer, Norah Jones, Tom Jones. You know, he's just a great guitar player, Robbie, and a great guy. And him and Pete work really well together. Yeah.
Lately I've been wondering, dreaming of the roads I've seen in my time, in my time. People wish me happy, but they want the reason to my rhyme, to my rhyme. Oh, but it's natural, natural as the poet's time. And I'm looking all around to see. I'm looking all around to see. My child of the night in the sweet country. Looking all around to see. I'm looking all around to see. My child of the night in the sweet country. Chances falling in between. Trains you take to meet a friend on the line. On the line. Turn your head and look their way. Don't have to know what you're gonna say or define. Or define. Cause it's natural, natural as a poet's time. And I'm looking all around, looking all around to see. I'm looking all around to see. My child of the night in the sweet country. Ooh, 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 ooh,
us about British Lions and how you ended up joining with the evolution of Mott the Hoople.
Well, when Peter had decided to leave at that point, as medicine head, we still had gigs in the book, you know, and I don't like letting people down, so I would never do that. So I asked a friend of mine, a guy named Morgan Fisher, if he'd like to come and finish off these gigs, you know.
Yeah.
We did, I don't know how many we did, but we did a lot. And also another guy, Roger Saunders, who played guitar when we augmented to a five-piece. We added a bass player, a drummer, and a guitar player for a while. And guitar player was Roger Saunders. So Roger, Morgan, and myself, we went out and did all the dates that were left in the book without adding any more to it. And then I was wondering what to do. You know, I just sort of put Medicine Head to one side for a second because, you know, I needed to have some time just to kind of gather my thoughts, you know, wonder what to do. And Morgan came over for dinner one night and the phone kept going for him. And what had happened was the Mott guys, the guys left after Ian Hunter left, they had a band called Mott, and it kind of didn't go where they wanted it to go for whatever reasons. Morgan was at my place and phone was ringing. And then eventually, you know, he said, the guys, you know, they keep on calling me because they wanted me to ask you if you fancy like getting in a rehearsal room and see if we can do anything together. And I thought, wow, that's really good. You know, I'll try that. Because I'd never worked really in a band situation. Anyway, I'd written this song called One More Chance to Run. I'd written it for Peter Hope Evans and me, you know, because it was like, let's give it another go. Let's have another go and see if we can get out there and do it. So we got to the rehearsals and I threw that out at the guys, you know. They loved it. They were just amazing. Finn and Watsy, you know, over and what, Morgan Fisher, and it was Ray Majors at that point playing guitar. It was incredible, you know. The power of those guys was stunning. It's just exactly what I like, because I used to play the bass drum, hi-hat, guitar, sing, you know, and harmonica as well. So I was used to high energy, even though you'd have to listen to some of the live stuff that we've recorded to hear the cacophony of noise. But you'd get the energy, you know. I just had a load of songs and just kept throwing another song and another song. And, you know, they were really digging it, you know. So that was how British Lions came about. The only thing I didn't like about British Lions was the name.
Is it too nationalistic or corny? Or?
Well, Watsy wanted to call it Big Ben, which also is kind of very odd. But again, you know, the American market, which is where we're really aimed at, I suppose, they love things like that. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But the first album was really good. And unfortunately, I think we were with Vertigo, and they didn't want to re-sign us, you know. So it was punk, it was the height of punk. I don't know whether that's a thing, you know. I didn't like the second album. You know, it's just not so good. But what had happened, I think, what contributed was the accountants took over the record companies, really. You know, became much more corporate and less creative. You know, didn't have proper A&R guys who just were there for the music.
We'll be right back.
We started at the beginning talking about artwork, but your album Warriors of Love acts as a lovely companion piece to the album, which was released about 3 years ago. Can you tell us about that album?
Yeah. I was living in America for quite a lot of years, and personal circumstances brought me back to the UK in 2016, I think it was, 2016. And so I started to regrow some roots over here and started to go out and play a few gigs. And I collapsed on stage, had a really tough time, and ended up in hospital that night. And it was early on in being back in the UK, and it was a heart issue. And what it meant was that I couldn't go out and do any gigs for quite a while. And I've only just been signed off by the cardiologist, which is fantastic. But what it meant was that I wasn't going to be out, you know, doing the things you love to do, like playing. And also along came COVID. So Warriors Love was all about trying to put across the feeling that let's all become warriors and help each other. You know, let's be warriors of love. Be a warrior. Don't be a worrier. Let's get positive about all this stuff and see what we can do to help each other. And so it just started as a very kind of pure thing, I suppose. You know, I believe in freedom. I believe in truth. I believe in the power of love. And I believe in you. That's the opening lines of Warriors of Love, the song. Not telling people what to do. I don't like that. I like to share things. And if we, you know, it's up to you whether you like it or not, you know, but I'm not going to say this is what you have to do. You know, this is the way to go. You know, but I like to put ideas out there. So Warriors of Love was made at a time when I couldn't do anything else, the same as anybody else, you know, because we're all locked down. Just wrote a bunch of songs, you know, just got a few things out there. When I write, I'm like a receiver transmitter almost, you know, there's a buzz on the airwaves and I'm receiving it. I'm available to listen to whatever it is, you know, listen to your heart, listen to whatever it is, you know. I'm not really a theme person. You know, a lot of people, they choose a theme and write a song about it. I'm more chaotic than that, which I love. In fact, with hard work, I couldn't make my mind up about what was the running order. So I wrote all the titles down, cut them up, put them into a bag and just drew them out. And, you know, the first one was, I actually knew I was going to put Making Up for Lost Love as track one. And then the next one was whatever it is, Alibi, I think, or something. I just pulled them out. And that was it. And I kind of made a decision that whatever that was, that's the order. Anyway, Warriors of Love, yeah. It's all about the way you feel. It's being open to receiving ideas and then transmitting them via a CD, recording them, putting the work in, really.
That's fantastic. So you've released Medicine Head albums in recent years. Are you doing live dates?
I'm just beginning to put dates in. I got a website. It's medicinehead, all one word, medicinehead.rocks, R-O-C-K-S. So it's not .com. It's not .co.uk. It's medicinehead.rocks. And on that, there's information about gigs. The first ones I do coming up, yeah, I mentioned a friend of mine, Bucket, Dave Bucket Colwell, guitar player. He was in Bad Company, you know, when Mickey was there, Mickey Ralphs was there. Dave came in and he was working with Mick. And then Mick got, you know, he had to leave and he's not very well. I think Bucket decided that I needed to go and play some gigs. And he said, right, we're playing at the Half Moon in Putney, which is in London, obviously. He said, do you want to open up? I didn't even think about it. I said, yeah. So I went along and did that. It was in November. And so he knew exactly what he was doing. I mean, he got the thirst going again, you know, for playing live. I've now got, I don't know, about 6 or 7 or 8 gigs that we're doing 2 more. The Half Moon sold out. So we're doing 2 nights this time and I'm doing those with them. And that's the last day of April and the first day of May. Then I've got more. I'm going up to Cromer. Then I'm coming back down to play Hurtwood Polo Club. And I've got gigs all the way into next year. So just get on the website and there's a contact thing there for gigs. So I really enjoy playing. And Bucket, he knew what he was doing when he asked me to do that, because he's opened the door.
John, it's been fantastic to talk to you, and I've loved listening to your latest album, Heartwork, discussing a selection of your material and stories from your time in music. Thank you again.
Well, Jason, it's very kind of you to invite me, you know, and I love sharing and hearing the positivity coming back from you. It's just fabulous. So thank you, and thanks to everybody who hears this, you know. Take care of yourselves.
I believe in truth. I believe in the power of love, and I believe in you. We can't stand by and watch these tears as the whole world cries. I'm a warrior of love, and ready or not, I'm gonna give you everything I've got.
Warriors of love.
Every day, every night.
Warriors of love.
Oh, come on, baby. Hold me tight. Tender love we made. It would be tragic just living with this hate. And I can't stand by and watch these tears as the whole world cries. I'm a warrior. Every night.
Warriors of love.
All my love, all my life.
Warriors of love.
I believe in you, baby.
Journey unfolds in the strange blue stories untold.